Okay. So okay. So now we're going to enter the next section on in our algorithms class is on what I would call optimization problems. So far, the primary thing that we have been doing, we talked about data structures and sorting. Okay, and in data structures and sorting, those are problems which do it the dumb way, you have an n squared algorithm or an n algorithm. Do it the smart way, it's an n log n or a log n algorithm. So it's really we're worried about time efficiency more than in somehow than correctness. Correctness was sort of obvious. When we're working at optimization problems, okay, here we are given a task and our goal is to find the best possible answer. Okay, that you're given a problem, find me the fairest way to divide up. You know, again, we talked about the opposite of the Newt Gingrich problem, the one where we try to divide it fairly. Given a set of n things, divide them up as fairly as possible. Okay, so the difference between the people on the left and on the right is minimized. Okay, there is an optimal answer to that. Finding it is a very hard thing. I told you that particular problem is NP complete. Here we're going to be looking at a class of a technique. The next couple days we'll talk about a technique called dynamic programming, which is a technique for finding the best possible solution to an optimization problem that works for a large class of optimization problems. Okay? So if you ask me what programming algorithmic technique do I use in practice the most, I would say dynamic programming is one of my favorite tricks. Okay? Dynamic programming, which we'll talk about over the next couple of lectures, is a kind of a funny thing that once you understand it, it's really, honestly, a very easy thing to apply. Okay? Typically, people have a hard time understanding it. Okay? That's sort of the trade-off here. Okay? But it's one of these ideas that if you go to any algorithm designer and say, oh, look, I found the dynamic program, they're going to say, big deal. Okay, it's not interesting. It's easy. Okay? Because it's really a very, very simple trick once you understand it. But until you understand it, it gets to be, you know, it looks like magic. So I encourage you to stick with this and ask questions and follow up and try to see what the idea is. Okay? And don't let me get away unless you understand sort of what the idea is. The basic idea of dynamic programming, summed up in one sentence, is it's a technique for computing recurrence relations efficiently by storing partial results. That is what dynamic programming is. Have any of you seen recurrence relations? How many of you have seen recurrence relations before in some class? Several of you have. How many people have never heard the word recurrence relation? A few people will wave your hand. How many people have not taken AMS 301 yet? Okay, a few of you. Okay, when you take AMS 301, you will learn about recurrence relations. If not, when you took 113, you certainly learned about recursive programs, right? How many people here have heard of seen the Fibonacci numbers? Everyone knows the Fibonacci numbers. Okay? So the Fibonacci numbers are basically a recurrence relation. They're a sequence of numbers defined by a recurrence relation. What is a recurrence relation? It is the equation defined in terms of itself. Okay? And what is the recurrence Fibonacci numbers? F of n equals f of n minus 1 plus f of n minus 2. Right? With the starting points f of 0 equals 0 and f of 1 equals 1. Any questions about that? Has everybody seen that and understand that? Suppose we were to write a recursive subprogram for computing the Fibonacci numbers. That's pretty easy, right? Fib sub n is basically if n equals 0, return 0. If n equals 1, return 1. Otherwise, return fib sub n minus 1 plus fib sub n minus 2. Okay? Does everybody see this program?
Does everybody agree this program computes the Fibonacci numbers? The question, like, why does it compute the Fibonacci numbers is a good question. Okay? My question now is, how much time does it take? So you understand the Fibonacci numbers. You understand that it's a recurrence relation. Okay? How much time does it take to compute fib sub n? Okay, let's try to analyze this program. Is it fast or slow? Slow. Okay? How slow? Well, it's not obvious. It shouldn't be. The first time I saw this program, I didn't think this was slow. Okay, it looks like a nice little program. It's short. Very nice. Why is it slow? Yeah? Okay? So let's think about what happens recursively when we call this thing. Remember what happens when you call a recursive routine? Basically, it starts out by, what's it going to do? To compute fib of 6. Okay, what's it going to do? It's going to compute fib of 5. And then when fib of 5 is finished, it's going to go and compute fib of 4. Okay? How did it compute fib of 4? Okay, well, it computed fib of 4 by calling fib of 3 and fib of 2. Notice that fib of 3 is called in two places again. Okay? So, the recursion tree that you get from this program is this full tree. Okay, and if you don't understand this, this is a great time to ask a question. Does everybody see that, in fact, in computing fib of 6 with this program, this is the tree of subroutine calls that you get. Okay? How many people see that this is what is happening? You're computing the same thing over and over and over again. Okay? Any questions about that? Okay? How many times? Does anybody know how many times this will be called? What is the time complexity of this thing? Okay? P to the n. What is P? Does anyone know what the value of the nth Fibonacci number is? Okay, you probably saw this in AMS. Okay, yeah. Like a golden number, okay, we're a golden ratio to the n-ish, to some other little term, right? Remember what the golden ratio is? 1.618 something or other to the n, right? Now, this is something, if you know about Fibonacci numbers, you've seen it, if not, it's not a big deal, but how many stands will the subroutines be called? Take a look at this routine. When is it going to stop? Okay? Let's think about how to analyze this routine. We agree that fib of 1 is 1, fib of 0 is 0. Okay? What happens when we evaluate this subroutine completely? This recursive call completely? I want to claim that the only places where it stops is either going to get a value of 0 or 1. Right? So how do you get a value for the nth Fibonacci number of 1.6 to the n? Well, you have to have summed up 1.6 to the n leaves. Right? Is that sort of clear if you think about it? Because all you do is you're then passing this number up. Okay? The ones are all coming from these basis cases. You'll be making 1.6 to the n recursive calls to f of 1 to compute the nth Fibonacci number. Any questions? This is an exponential time algorithm. Okay? Any questions about that? Does everybody see why it is exponential? Question like, why is an exponential is a good question. Okay, any questions? Now, do we really need to spend exponential time to compute the Fibonacci numbers? Can anybody, well, you may say, well, I don't care about the Fibonacci numbers, I don't spend any time doing it. Okay, but that's not what I'm looking for. What would be a faster way to compute the Fibonacci numbers? Yes. What you want to propose is an algorithm that goes something like this. 4i equals 1, 2, n. f is equal to f n minus f minus. Okay, you could have actually an array here. You could say basically f of 0 equals 1, 0, f of 1 equals 1, f of I equals f of I plus f of I minus 1. Right? So here I've used, okay, and my I minus 2, you're right. Okay, I minus 2, 1 plus I minus 2. Okay? So what is this doing? This is keeping track of an array of values from 1 to n, telling you the value 0 to n. 0, 1, 2, 3, 5, 8, 13, 21, 34, 55, dot, dot, dot. Okay? How much time does this algorithm take as a function of n? Okay? All of n, right? We have n steps. Each step is just looking up two values, right? And stuffing them, adding them up. This is an order n algorithm to compute the recurrence. Does everybody agree with that? The naive way where we didn't store results was 1.6 to the n. Storing the results took linear time. Okay? Does everybody agree with that? This is the key idea here, yeah. Okay, another way to do it, okay, if you want to be a little smart aleck about it, is you could actually say, look, I know this value, I can just plug this formula in, okay? And by the way, if you're assuming you can do exponentials in constant time, you could get away with it in constant time. If in fact you assume you don't have exponentiation, but just a multiplication, it would take log n time. But that's not the point that I want to make. The point that I want to make here is that we want to evaluate a recurrence relation. Okay? And we're computing that doing it recursively would take exponential time. But by storing the appropriate values, we manage to reduce it down to basically equal to the number of values. Okay? Any questions? Okay? This is dynamic programming in action. Okay? This is, what was dynamic programming? Dynamic programming was, as we said before, a technique for computing recurrence relations efficiently by storing partial results. What were the partial results? Here. What was the recurrence relation? Here. Okay, yes. By storing, right. Okay, and that's okay, that's not doing any good, but you're right. So that's storing. Okay? What's that? Okay, I'm sorry. Any questions? Okay? So this is the big idea here, is that if you want to compute any recurrence relation, you can do it by storing the results. Okay? And what really, and this so far should be quite simple and understandable. Okay, although this is really the heart of the idea. Any questions? Now, what makes dynamic programming hard is, or as a real technique in algorithms, is now seeing an algorithm, a problem. You have to formulate a recurrence relation to solve it, and then score, evaluate it by storing partial results. Those are the two steps that we will really need in dynamic programming. We're going to look at a problem, see that it can be solved by a recursive algorithm, or design a recursive algorithm to solve it. The recursive algorithm might be horribly slow on A if we left it alone, but by storing the appropriate results, if we're lucky, we can evaluate that recurrence very efficiently. Any questions? Okay, so keep in mind the big picture here, that what we really, and the biggest picture is to see how you can solve your problem by a recursive algorithm. Okay, and then it's just a question of how do you do it efficiently. Any questions? Okay, so let's look at a well-known
algorithmic problem, okay, that might be interesting. And the example that I'd like to talk about now, as sort of our first example, is a very important classical problem, that of approximate string matching. Okay, so here, what is the algorithmic problem? The problem is I give you a text string and I give you a pattern string. Okay, and I want to know where in the text does that pattern exist. Okay, so let's think about it. Let's think about it in the case where there was no errors. Okay, suppose I give you a string of length N and a pattern of length M. And this string is an array of characters, where is my true love, whatever it is, okay? And your text pattern is love, let's say, okay? Can someone give me an algorithm? This string is of length N, the algorithm, the patterns of length M. Can someone give me an algorithm to test whether or not the pattern is present in the string? Yes. So basically, you align the pattern here, love, okay, is WL? No. You move your pattern over one more position. Is HL? No. Okay, maybe, so how much time will that algorithm take? Okay, how much time? Well, okay, first of all, you were saying just N. You tell me it doesn't take anything to do with the pattern? In the worst case, what might happen? Yeah? I will claim that it is O of N times M. What if my pattern was E-E-E-E-H, okay, F, and my string was all E's? What would you do? You would be saying E-E-E-E-E, not F, E-E-E-E-E, not F, okay? So you're going to be doing what? At every one of the N positions, you're going to be doing M comparisons, right? Everybody agree? So the naive algorithm for doing exact string matching is N times M. Okay? How many people see that? Okay? Any questions about that? Okay? Yes?
Could you instead just look at each word? Like, I don't know how to do it, but the job would have like a string string matching and the way spaces and then you just compare.
Okay, well now if you start assuming something about your strings, okay, like the presence of white spaces, maybe that makes it, I can't talk about what your assumptions about your strings are. But first of all, the Bible, let's say at least is written in the original Hebrew or Aramaic, did not have white space, okay? So the world, a DNA sequence does not have white space, okay? So you can't, in general, if I'm looking for a string of, if I have a general text string and is a general text string, I want to claim that I don't see where you get a win. Okay. Any questions? Yeah, I agree that if all words were short, if the longest word was of constant size, then it would be order n, right? N times a constant. But so long as this pattern is potentially large, okay, then it's n times n. Any questions? Okay. Yes. Any questions? Okay. In fact, there are faster ways to do it, but they're complicated and beyond the scope of this class. Okay. But I hope your text editor does that when you do a plot. Okay. So this is looking for exact matching in a text. Okay. And it should be clear that that's a useful thing to do, because if you want to look for on a web page, where is Skeena in the web page? Okay. You type in Skeena, you can do it. So that's a useful thing to do. But what if people have misspellings?
Okay.
A lot of people will spell Skeena something different. Let's say S-K-I-E-N-N-A. okay? And, you know, I would like to, let's say you want to look up, if I'm mentioned somewhere on the webpage, and you type this as a query to Google, okay, or a query to a search page, okay? This algorithm we talked about can't be expected to find that, right? Looking for an exact match, S-K-I-E-N-A, oops, it's not matching, okay? I claim that an important problem is recognizing, searching for patterns where there is some level of error. Okay, does everybody see that that's a reasonable, what might be a reasonable application of this? Okay, anybody? Spell checker is a good thing, right? Okay, so how can we search for close matches, or what I will call approximate string matching? Approximate string matching is the following problem. I give you a pattern, and I give you a text over the same alphabet. And I ask for a match, okay, a k-approximate match between the pattern and the text is a substring of the text which differs in at most k places from the pattern. Where differences are, I may do a substitution. I may have spelled cat, K-A-T. In fact, cat can be changed to cat, C-A-T, in one substitution. I may have added another letter to my pattern text so I could delete a letter from my text to get the pattern. Or maybe I left something out of my, I could have too much in my text or too little in my text. Okay? So I can either do a substitution or an insertion or a deletion. Okay? And approximate string matching is the problem of given a pattern, given a text, figuring out what's the smallest number of changes I need to make to find the pattern. Okay? Any questions? Okay? So actually, I have one example here, which I think I can find here. Suppose, let's say, we wanted to update the Old Testament, okay, into new newer language, okay? You might want to change thou shalt not kill, okay? Not kill to you should not murder. Okay, I think that's the example that I have here. I'll just say, we don't worry about this last thing. How do we change thou shalt not to you shall not? What are the changes that you need to make? You have charged one for an insertion, one for a deletion, one for a substitution. Okay, you want to claim that in three changes you can do it.
Three per word.
What would be the changes that you could do in it? Okay. I want to claim that what I could do is do a substitution here. I could do a deletion here to get rid of that, right? And I could do a substitution here and an insertion here. What? And another substitution. So I want to claim that in five changes, I can make thou shalt not, you should not. Okay, does everybody see that? Because I can do a sub, I have two differences here, one differences, and get rid of one with a substitution or a deletion, and a substitution and a deletion, or a deletion and a substitution. Here, I'm getting rid of a and replacing it with an LU. That's, again, a substitution and an insertion if the other one was deletion. And then another substitution. So five changes is the distance between these two. Okay? Any questions? Now, what's my problem? Suppose I give you two strings. A string S and a string T. And I want to find what's the smallest number of insertions, substitutions you need. To convert one to the other. Okay? That is the problem of computing the edit distance. Okay? Any ideas how I might go about it? Okay? Claim it's a well-defined problem. Okay? Any questions about what the problem is? If you don't understand the problem, it's hopeless to try to solve it. Any questions about the problem? Why it might be useful or something like that? How is scoring edit distance? So suppose I now give you two different strings.
Let's say Wolfman and Wolfram. Remember, he's a speaker that's coming on Friday that I want you to go see. Okay, the distinguished speaker, Stephen Wolfram.
How do we compute the smallest number of changes between here and there? Any ideas?
Yeah?
In this case, you're saying, well, look, we'll start from the beginning and match, and look, there's only one substitution. Okay? But what if, let's say one of it was S. Wolf, let's say our speaker is Stephen Wolfram, S. Wolfram. Now you've got to know to delete the first thing, too. Okay? So I don't see how to generalize this. Okay? Yes? You're saying that if there is a discrepancy between the size, that's the number of insertions and deletions. And I don't know if that's necessarily true. Okay? Well, if they're the same size, you're saying that it would never fade into an insertion or a deletion? I don't believe that for a minute. What if, let's say, again, we have, X, 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 X. Well, okay, let's say we have A, B, C, D, E, F, G. And here I have X, A, B, C, D, E, F. Right? What's the way to do it? You start out with a deletion and shift everybody over, right? So that's not true, what you're saying. Okay? Any ideas? Yes?
Since we only have three operations, insertion, deletion, and substitution.
Yeah.
So that means only have a limited number of operations that we can do to the rest of the string. So we only look back for a certain length. And then we check if the next
okay, so you're actually saying something that sounds like a recursive algorithm. Okay? So I'm listening to what you're saying. It may not be what you're saying, but I want to hear you say. Okay? Is that you want to say this thing. That if I want to compare, I have this big string here. And this other string here. Let's say if I have to define the big comparison. To figure out what to do, okay, basically I'm going to do some operation at the end of my string. Maybe I'm going to do a substitution. Maybe I'm going to match them. Maybe I'm going to insert. Maybe I'm going to delete. But once I do that, the rest of the problem is now two other strings that have to be matched, which is smaller than the original string. Okay? That makes it sound recursive, right? To match the whole thing, figure out what to do at the end, and match them recursively, and proceed recursively. Okay? Any questions about that? Okay? That may not yet be clear. It may not be what you're thinking about. Okay? But let's think about this a little bit. Okay?
Let's look at a recursive algorithm. Let's let D sub ij be the minimum number of differences which it is possible to match a prefix of the first I characters of the pattern and the first J characters of the text. Okay? So suppose I want to know the cheapest way
to match this prefix of S with, you know, basically by prefix I mean, so basically let's think about the last character. I play that the cheapest possible way to align these strings, I have to do something at the end of the text. Right? I get a choice. I might decide to delete the last character. If I decide to delete this character, what is the cost of the matching? It's the cost of that deletion plus the cost of matching all of the string with everything but that character, right? If I decide to match, to delete this character, it's the cost of matching all of this plus one for that deletion, right? And if I decide to do a substitution, if this matches this, I have the choice of saying this matches this. And if they match, I pay the cost of matching everything but those two characters. If they miss, I pay one for the substitution, plus the cost of matching the prefix strings. Okay? I claim we get the following recursive algorithm. Okay, and the key notion here is to make sure you understand why the recursive algorithm is correct. Don't worry about the efficiency. If D sub ij is the minimum number of differences between the first I characters of one string and the first J characters of the other, there are three possible ways that I can do the end this matching. If the characters are the same, then I could end them in a match, and in that case, the cost of matching them would be the cost of matching everything but the last character on each string. Right? I get charged zero for that match. The cost is equal to I recursively solve the problem where I delete two characters off the character off each of the two strings. If they differ, if the last character of I is different from the last character of the pattern, is different from the last character of the text, then I could match them by doing a substitution and paying that cost that it took on the rest of the string. Otherwise, what I could do is delete a character from the text, pay one for it, and then pay the cost of the matching. Or I could delete one from the pattern and pay one for that deletion. Okay? I claim these are my only three possibilities. Okay? And what's the cheapest way to edit from here to, you know, the first I characters of the pattern to the first J character of the text? Well, it's the cheapest of these three ways. And the cheapest in each one of these three ways depends upon smaller things. This gives me a recursive algorithm to find the edit distance. Any questions? Okay, the important thing here is to see why this computes the edit distance correctly. Okay, if you don't get that, everything else is hopeless. Yes?
You said there's three possible ways, but how do we choose this way if we do all three combinations?
So let's do all three and find out which is the cheapest. Right? That's exactly what we're going to do. Okay? That I claim that there's three possible things I can do to end my matching. The optimal, the cheapest cost alignment is going to end on one of those three ways, right? And if it ends on that three ways, if it ends on a match, then what's the cost of it? The cheapest way to align everything but those last two characters, right? And if it ends on a delete, well, how much do I pay? Well, I have to pay one for that delete. But then and then to finish the job up is a smaller problem. Okay? Likewise in this case, if I delete from the other string, it reduces to a smaller problem. Okay? And if this is always going to be giving me the optimal number of differences between them, this recurrence tells me how to compute it. Any questions about that? Okay? Yes?
Then you're going to have to try every combination where it's going to be a million different.
Well, it's not going to be a million. It's going to be an exponential number, to be precise. A million is constant. A million doesn't scare me. But an exponential number does scare me. Why might this look exponential? Well, I'm drawing three possibilities here. What is this tree going to look like if I do a recursion? Let's look at that. What would my recursion tree look like if I was building this?
Okay.
Well, at the last part, to do, let's say I wanted back something of size 3, 3. Two strings of size 3. Well, I could either end up doing a substitution or a match. That would reduce the problem to 2, 2. Otherwise, I would reduce it to 1 of 3, 2 or 2, 3. Right? And this is also going to have three possibilities. Maybe I'll end up doing a substitution match. Maybe I'll do a deletion. 2, 1, or maybe I'll do an insertion. And this is going to be doing what? This is going to reduce it to something here that is either going to be, if I do a match, it's going to leave me 2, 1. Here it's going to leave me what? If I do a deletion to the second one, 3, 1. Here I'm going to do 2, 2. What about on this side? Okay, what am I going to do? My possibilities. What are my possibilities? 1, 2, delete from the second, 2, 2, delete from the first, 1, 3, and so on. I've got this big exponential tree, right? Is this going to take me exponential time to compute if I compute it in this way? Is there any possible trick I might have at my disposal to save me from exponential time? Once you believe the recursion is correct, I agree, if I build this tree to completeness, okay, I've got an exponential time algorithm, and I'm in trouble. But do you see any hope for saving? What might I do? Yes. Exactly right. So let's take a look here. 2-1 is being called here, and computed here, and computed here. Is there any reason why I need to, once I've computed what the value of 2-1 is there any reason why I need to look at it, compute it again? If I stored it in a table, wouldn't that make it easier? Okay. What about what other ones? Once I've computed 2-2 here, do I need to evaluate this subtree at all?
No.
No. How many different values might I possibly really need to compute here? Let's think about it. How many different labels can appear in this tree? 9, I heard. Why, is that what I heard? Why 9? There's 3 choices for the first thing, and 3 choices for the second thing, right? So I think there's 9 possible values here, right? In general, what if I have a string of length n times a string of length m? How many possible, what possible values can I have in here? How many of them? N times m. Does everybody agree with that? So what can I do if I use dynamic programming? What is dynamic programming? I thought I had it on a slide here. Okay. What is dynamic programming? It is a technique for computing recurrence efficiently is by sorting partial results, or storing partial results. Okay? So what I'm going to do here is, once you accept my recurrence relation, or edit distance, as correct, okay, then I claim, by storing these values and not recomputing them, there are only n squared, n times n, possibly interesting values. Okay? And the basic flow of the computation should be, if the value isn't in the table, compute it. Okay? If it isn't in that table, just look it up. Okay? Each value here that I update is simply adding, taking a min of 3 numbers. I want to actually say that there are n times n interesting values. Each
each of which, when I actually compute it, is only taking the min of three things. So in fact, it's going to take n times constant time, or order n times n. Any questions? Okay, this is complicated. Okay? So make sure we understand the basic steps that we have just done. The first point of contention does this function, recursive function, compute edit distance? Okay? You have to say yes or no to this. How many people see why this computes the minimum number of changes, the recursive procedure? How many people see it? How many people don't see it? Okay, good. A couple of people raised their hands. Okay? The most important thing is to see why the recursive procedure works. Okay? And the reason it works is an exhaustive search argument. Okay? Suppose we find the optimal alignment, the optimal sequence of matching operations, right? Here's string S1, here's string S. Here's my other pattern. In the optimal matching, here is an optimal matching, right? There had to be one, right? What happened to the last character in the pattern? Or the text. I played, if we just look at the right side of the picture, this optimal matching, how might the story have ended? It could have ended with the last character being matched with the other one, right? Either matched or substituted, depending upon whether the characters were the same, right? If this was an S and this was an S here, did it pay to do a substitution to convert an S to an S? No, you just got one, it cost you nothing to match them. Or you might have decided to hack off the last character in here. Okay? In which case it would have ended on a deletion. Okay? Or you might have chosen to instead hack off the last character here. In which case it ends on an insertion. Again, there's sort of the symmetry here. But I claim that whatever you did, you ended in one of these three possibilities. And this is now recursively iterating through all possible options. Okay? It's constructing all possible alignments implicitly. That was why it was exponential. Okay? So where's the correctness? We had to do something with the last character. We considered all possible ways, the three possible things we could have done with the last character. And we found out what was the cheapest way to end up doing something with that last character. If we end up on a match, then if we find the optimal way to match the prefixes up to that point, that is the cheapest way to end at this, like this. This is the cheapest way to end on, if we do one a deletion, this is the cheapest way if we end on an insertion. That is why it is correct. Any questions? Okay. So the things to carry away with you, okay, again, we are out of time. But the important thing is that that this is a correct, and by storing the results, we avoid the recomputation. Any questions? Okay. Thanks for your attention. Talk to you next class.